Welcome to the latest episode of Catch 22 Minutes. Now, for millions of people in the UK, drug taking is a normal part of everyday life. By that, I mean things like drinking alcohol, caffeine, taking a paracetamol for a headache. For some, though, drug taking is a serious problem, often having a devastating effect on the individual's life and the lives of those around them. Latest statistics show that over 20% of young people aged 16 to 24 have taken an illicit drug. Around 7% were known to have taken a Class A drug, deemed to be the most dangerous, and around 18% have taken cannabis, a Class B drug. Now, in today's discussion, we're going to be exploring just how much of a problem drug and substance misuse is amongst young people. We'll be asking what can be done to support young people struggling with drug dependency and how the often conflicting messages in the media about what is and isn't harmful can cause challenges when tackling drug and substance misuse.
This is Catch 22 Minutes.
Joining me today to share their thoughts and insights, I'm delighted to be joined by Julie Poling, who is Service Manager at Catch22's Hampshire 24/7 Young People's Substance Misuse Service. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Melissa.
And Katie Bunstead, who is Service Manager at Catch22 Surrey Young People's Substance Misuse Service. Hi, Katie.
Morning.
So, welcome to you both. Thank you so much for joining me today. And let me start by asking you, perhaps Julie first, what is it like working in young people's substance misuse services in Britain in 2023?
I think I've worked in young people's services for 20 years, so things have changed dramatically in that time. And I think that it's multifaceted, really. So if we think about from a young person's perspective, cannabis, for example, is really normalised in society, not just by young people, but professionals as well, who often take the view that it's only a bit of cannabis. And that means that young people often don't see the negative impacts that cannabis could be having on them and their lives. I think social media also plays a big part in the accessibility of drugs. So young people don't even need to leave their house to go and seek substances through the dark web. And there are substance misuse accounts that advertise delivery of any substance to your door, literally. From an employment or a workforce perspective, I don't think there's enough funding for young people's services, which means there aren't enough staff. The majority of funding for substance misuse services is focused on adult provision, which I think is short-sighted because we could be working on early intervention and prevention strategy rather than waiting till somebody has entrenched substance use. So the idea of the work we do is to kind of prevent young people from going into adult services where they do have entrenched substance use later on in life.
Thanks, Julie. Katie, similar picture for you in Surrey?
Yeah, very similar. We're definitely getting more young people coming into the service using more risky substances. So I've been in Surrey for nearly 6 years now doing this kind of work. And when I started, it was just cannabis coming in or alcohol. We are seeing definitely more young people coming into service for more high class users, so stuff like ketamine, benzos, things like that. So yeah, we are seeing a change and a shift in substance misuse in young people.
Thank you both. I wanted to pick up on your point, Julie, about the arguably kind of confusing or contradictory messages around some drugs, and in particular you mentioned cannabis. Now, we know there's increasing popularity of what are called cannabis edibles, marketed specifically at children and young people, which contain THC, which is an active ingredient in cannabis. And yet, you know, this is set in the context of a society that is increasingly recognising and actually promoting the benefits of CBD, which is another active ingredient in cannabis products, which can be legally purchased from a variety of reputable retailers. Now, thinking about young people, presumably that sends a message of, well, actually, cannabis is okay. You use the phrase normalised, Julie. So just talk us through what the effect of that potentially contradictory message is on young people that you're seeing.
I think young people dismiss the impacts that cannabis can have on their life because things are seen to be so normalised for them. Like you said, edibles, even vaping THC we're seeing, which is causing quite a lot of problems. So I think there's many more young people vaping in general, whether that's tobacco or just flavoured vaping. So the step on to THC or cannabis in vapes is, for some, it's a natural progression. And I think we give such mixed messages. I mean, most young people, until things like CBD products came out, they didn't even know that CBD and THC was. So certainly when I started 20 years ago, the strains of cannabis that young people were using had THC and CBD in, whereas now the majority of the strains that young people smoke are just high in THC and they have little or no CBD in it. So again, I think we're going back around this kind of mixed messages cycle, where at times we've suggested to young people, actually, they look at CBD as a way of coming off cannabis, so CBD oil particularly. But we kind of run the risk when we've got edibles that they see CBD and think that's okay. So it's really challenging, I think, from a service point of view, how we direct our education around that stuff.
That's really interesting. And Katie, from your perspective, what is the effect of cannabis on young people, or what can be the effect if it's abused?
So we would say misused, but we are seeing a lot of young people self-medicating with it. So they are using it. We've got a lot of young people in services, in our service, and probably in Julie's as well, where they're on a waiting list for mental health. So a lot of young people will self-medicate, help them go to sleep, make them just feel, because obviously it's a depressant, so it depresses their nervous system. So it's making them feel more chilled out, but they're not understanding that the high THC in it now is also much higher than the CBD. So when you self-medicate, for that moment in time, you have got, okay, a bit relaxing, but you're kind of covering your emotions and feelings. So then when they're not using it, their feelings are coming to surface. So again, it's a lot of our young people in our services are using substances to self-medicate, I would say, that are problematic users.
So it's a pretty complex picture that you're painting, I guess. Just thinking about the reasons perhaps why young people may become involved in drug use. I know you read a lot in the media about sort of mental health, poor mental health of young people perhaps being a factor. Again, could you give us a sense of, in your view, what you're seeing as a driving factor for the increase in drug use amongst young people?
I would say a lot of young people do use substances to see if it's fun. We have to remember young people do just try substances. We work in an industry where we're seeing it when it's become problematic. Okay, so we're seeing kind of the worst case scenario. But a lot of young people will use substances because, oh, it looks like it's fun. Our friends said it was fun. They're all doing it. So we need to remember that as part of a young person growing up. They're going to kind of try certain things, experiment. So I think we have to remember that as well. I think the when it starts to become problematic is because they've liked the feeling. It's become part of their routine. And it's a way of them coping. So I think as much as we do the job of working within young people with problematic substance misuse, we have to remember sometimes, most of the time, they've started trying it because their friends have, peer pressure, they're not understanding. And I think one of our biggest problems, like Julie was saying, is celebrities on social media growing, advertising it, things like that. So we've got young people going, well, what, they're using it, so why can't I? So with the celebrities promoting it, and the gummies as well, like, they look like normal sweets. It's so glorified now, we're having a real trouble with it. And we get a lot of referrals in, and they've all got cannabis on there, but they're not coming in to talk about their cannabis. They're coming into the service for another substance. But cannabis is normally, I would say cannabis is on, I'd say 80, maybe 85% of our young people's referral, but they do not want to address it because they don't think it's problematic.
Interesting. Thanks, Katie. Julie, from your point of view, why are young people, or the people that are coming through your doors, turning to drugs, do you think?
Like Katie said, a lot of it is because they want to have fun. Cannabis is so normalised in young people. A lot of them will say everyone's doing it, and a lot of their peers are using it. And I think there's, rather than peer pressure, I think there's an element of peer acceptance. So if they think everybody else is doing it, they're going to do it to be part of that gang or to be cool. Whereas maybe 30, 40 years ago, it was smoking. Now young people are vaping and using cannabis. And I guess the busiest part of our service in Hampshire at the moment is in our over 18. So we work up to 25, and we have a massive amount of over 18s in our service. And they tend to be young people who have moved on from cannabis and are using class A substances, or they're involved in benzodiazepine use. They're using opiate medication like codeine, tramadol, and they have no idea that actually they're in the same family as heroin. And a lot of dependent drinkers. And I think we're missing lots of those young people because, like Katie said, it's normalised for young people to be drinking alcohol. It's normalised for them to be smoking cannabis. And it's not then until they're using other drugs, kind of class A drugs, or they have dependent use, that they then come into the service. And we really need to try and move that so that we're catching them earlier and preventing them from going on to have problematic substance use or dependent use.
Great. And I know you've mentioned vaping a couple of times, Julie, so I'm going to mention that in a minute and have a quick discussion with you about that. But I just wanted to ask you about how young people find your service. So you're talking about this sort of, I guess, escalating use, you know, from maybe a class B drug, and then we're getting into this sort of class A. How do young people come to your service and find you to get the help?
I mean, in Hampshire, something like 60% of our over 18s referrals are self-referrals, which is really unusual when we talk to other services, not just Catch 22 services, but other substance misuse services. They're not seeing that kind of level. So when we've talked to young people, most of it's word of mouth. So they know somebody that's used the service, which is great for us. In terms of under 18s, the majority come from children's services, education settings, GP surgeries. So we don't do lots of advertising in Hampshire because we are so busy that we kind of become victims of our own success, I guess. And kind of going back to what I said at the beginning, not having enough staff isn't just because there's not enough funding, but we found it really difficult to recruit as well. And I think that's across the board. That's in all areas of business. It's not just young people's substance misuse services. It's right across the board, but that presents its own challenges.
So Katie, is it a similar picture in Surrey in terms of the young people coming to your service?
No, so we don't get as many self-referrals. So we do, we are currently at the moment promoting more because we do want more young people to refer themselves in. We get most of our referrals probably from schools and children's services and A&E. So yeah, so we've got really good links with schools. All the children's services are targeted support workers, but we do want to get more young people to self-refer in. But I think in Surrey, we've got a bit... We do focus groups with young people and we ask them what would be good for, why wouldn't young people come into the service? So what we're seeing is they think that we work with the police, which we don't. So we've also got to break the barrier down with young people that actually we're not here to criminalise you, we're here to support you. And the only time we'd ever have to escalate it would be if they're at risk. So I think we've got a lot of young people worried about that and self-referring in, but we have just changed all of our leaflets and we've made it more young person friendly, so if they do want to engage with us, they've got just a small piece of paper now they can scan and they can refer in. So we are very different to Hampshire, but with the recruitment, we're also struggling with recruitment as well. So it's a definitely over the board, recruitment's really hard at the moment.
And when a young person comes into your service, what's your approach? Presumably it kind of depends on the individual, but generally speaking, you know, you've both talked about essentially that point I made at the beginning about we're living in a drug-taking society. So how do you approach supporting these young people?
So we are a harm reduction approach. So we are non-judgmental. We don't ever tell them what they need to do. So when a young person comes in, we work with them with what they want. So it could be they just come in in Surrey, we can do like a tier two and a tier three. And I'll explain that a tier two is a few sessions on education, just making sure they understand the risks. And then you've got a tier three, which is structured where they are hoping to have a reduction. So it's all about what that young person needs and wants from us. I think we have to understand with young people around, if you tell a young person to do something, they're probably not going to listen to you because they're young people. So having that open, honest conversation with them, and it could be anything to a small reduction. It could be that maybe one day they didn't use a joint, or one day that they waited all day until they used. That's a massive thing for young people. And I think in this society, we need to remember that, that actually they're still developing and they're using substances, and they're using substances for a reason when they're in our service. So we can't say to them, let's stop using, because that's probably their coping skill. So it's very much around what that young person wants. And we use a lot of motivational interviewing. We're just making sure that they're answering the questions they're seeing, instead of us telling, they're saying what they want from us. And I think that's why it gives us such success, because we have that approach. Don't get me wrong, there are obviously a bit, it can be a bit hard sometimes because you've got parents and carers and professionals that just kind of think, right, they're going to go into this service and they're going to stop using. And that's not the case. So we do get, it can be quite hard. And it also can be quite hard, especially if they're under youth justice and they've been caught with maybe cannabis, and we're saying, right, we need to just get them to understand the risks and so on and so forth. So it's definitely, it's young person centred.
Julie, anything to add to that? Any particular sort of cases that spring to mind of successes you've had?
We work very differently to adult services. There's a lot of differences, but primarily the biggest difference is language. So adult services tend to use language like addicted, recovery, abstinence, and that feeds into their targets, and the aims of adult provision is for people to abstain and recover. And like Katie said, it would be unrealistic of us to go in with that same kind of heavy hand. And that's what young people expect us to do. They expect us to say, you've got to stop. They expect us to say, you know, this is harmful. And of course it is. And of course we want young people to abstain, but it's not always what their goal is. And that's what they least expect about us. And I think for other services to really get an understanding of how young people's services work, and to be able to sell that to young people, is the best thing that, you know, our partners could do, really, because although it does cause conflict with parents and it can cause conflict with other agencies, we know that that approach works. Coercive treatment doesn't work with young people, and they're much more likely to come back to us in the future when they are ready to cut down and stop using, if we take that approach with them, if we take a harm reduction approach, and we try to point out gently the issues that perhaps their substance use is causing. And sometimes they come into the service and they don't want to make changes, but by the time they leave, they've made massive changes.
Julie, you've mentioned vaping a couple of times. What's your view on that? Is this the next big public health crisis?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of young people are vaping where they wouldn't think twice about smoking cigarettes. They are being given or have been given vapes by shops because there was a gap in the kind of legal responsibility of shopkeepers that they could give them out. So I think closing that gap takes one step. But I assessed a young man only a few weeks ago who'd been caught in school with cannabis and cannabis paraphernalia. And when I asked him about it, he said, oh, I've never used cannabis, but I vape. And he had stolen the cannabis from somebody else, taken it into school so that he gave the other young person the cannabis and he got his vapes. So young people are taking desperate measures to get a vape in the same way as they might do for drugs. So I think it is on the horizon to being a massive problem. And currently we're not funded to work with people that are just vaping unless it involves THC or cannabis. And I think that's something that needs to change very quickly, because otherwise we're going to have a massive cohort of young people that wouldn't think twice about smoking but are addicted to nicotine because of it.
Is vaping safer for young people than cigarettes, though?
I would say that's a really hard question at the moment, because there is not a lot of evidence. What I think we're seeing is young people also coming into service vaping THC. So it's kind of got to a whole new level. And we have had young people that have been vaping THC and it's not been THC, it's been spice. So taking away the risk of it, is it actually a vape or what's in that vape? We've got young people getting them and it's not just nicotine, and they think they're smoking THC, and it's not THC. So I think with a substance misuse service, we're very similar to Julie. We're not funded to work with vape, like people just using vapes. But we've had, in the last week, 5 young people referred in for THC vapes. And they're our biggest risk, because when they started coming out in THC vapes, we had young people in hospital because it wasn't THC. So saying, is it safer than smoking cigarettes in young people? I would probably say no, because they're not getting them legitimately. They're using them from someone who sold them on the streets, maybe, or they think it's THC. It's not safe. It's not as safe as it could be because of the fact that they don't know what's actually in it.
Very finally, thinking about kind of drugs policy, I know one of the things we've talked about previously at Catch 22 is around the fact that adult kind of drug policy sort of dominates, and perhaps not enough thought is given to the approach to young people. You've outlined really well the approach that we take at Catch 22 to supporting young people struggling with drug and substance misuse. If there was one thing that you think needed to be changed in drug policy, what would it be?
I do think there needs to be more of a highlight with young people in substance misuse. There needs to be more recognition for young people that have also got parents that are substance misuse users, because I think that does have a ripple effect. I do think it's a really hard question to answer, because there's a lot that we could probably say.
I mean, interestingly, in the new government strategy, Harm to Hope, there is a focus on early intervention, and there is a focus on familial substance misuse. So in Hampshire, we have a service that supports the children of substance misusing parents, but that is not currently got much funding. So we know that in Hampshire, a lot of the children who are living with a substance misusing parent aren't engaging with adult services, and currently our criteria is that the referral needs to come from adult services. So I think if we allowed anybody to refer to that service, we'd be overrun, because we know that those children are out there and they're living, a lot of them are living with dependent alcohol users that aren't even recognised by children's services or schools as having a substance misuse issue, because it's alcohol, it's kind of dismissed. And actually what we're seeing in our children of substance misusing parents service is that the biggest impact has been from alcohol. Yeah, we've had multiple young people whose parents have died because of their alcohol use, so we can't dismiss that either. But I think the gap in the current drug policy focus is that we're not addressing the bit in between adults and early intervention, which I said at the beginning. There's a massive gap in the middle that if we don't tackle, we have no hope of reducing adult substance misuse.
Thank you to both Julie and Katie for their insights. We've had a broad-ranging discussion about the changing nature of drug and substance misuse amongst young people, including the dangers of some drugs, such as cannabis, being normalised in society, and the conflicting messages we see and hear in the media about its safety. The same can be said for vaping, which is becoming increasingly popular amongst young people and carries real health dangers. As Julie and Katie said, given we're living in a drug-taking society, the support provided to young people is more effective when it's focused on harm reduction rather than, as is often the case for adult services, abstinence. But that's not always an easy message to land with parents and carers of those young people struggling with substance misuse.